Welcome to Trustworthy AI, De-risked Business Adoption of AI, hosted by Pamela Gupta, a leading voice in business strategy, technology, and cybersecurity. With extensive experience in global industry leadership, Pamela has explored critical themes like achieving business value with AI by adopting a holistic risk-based approach to AI trust. She defined 8 essential pillars of trustworthy AI. Read more details at the trustedai.ai website. Her insights have shaped the way we look at the impact of cyber warfare on business, strategies for efficient digital transformation, and governance views on algorithmic failures. Join Pamela as she delves into her signature framework, AI Tips, standing for Artificial Intelligence Transparency, Integrity, Privacy, and Security. This podcast is all about operationalizing governance and building trustworthy AI systems from the ground up. Whether you're an industry professional or just AI curious, Trustworthy AI offers thought-provoking discussions and expert insights to guide the ethical future of technology.
Welcome to Trustworthy AI, De-risk Adoption of AI. We are going to talk about from AI principles to responsible AI today. I have Dr. Richard Benjamins with us, who is among the 100 most influential people in data-driven business globally. Dr. Benjamins is co-founder and CEO of the Spanish Observatory for Ethical and Social Impact of AI, and he is also a former Chief Responsible AI Officer at Telefonica. In addition to that, he is a co-founder of Telefonica's AI for Society and Environment area and played a very pivotal role in shaping Telefonica's approach to ethical use of AI. Welcome, Dr. Benjamins.
Thank you very much, Pamela. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Would you like to add anything else that I may have not mentioned and you think is important for our conversation today in your background, I mean?
No, my background is very long, so I think we just go to the topic, yeah? One of the things that I could highlight is that there is a lot of talk about what it means to do responsible AI, what is the ethical use of AI, but there's very little experience in doing it for real in an organization. And that's one of the things that I can contribute.
That's great. Thank you. And I think we'll just start off with that, as in when we're talking about going from AI principles to implementation of responsible AI, what are some of the challenges that you have come across that, you know, we can benefit from?
Yeah, that's actually a very, very good question. Yeah, that fits very well in what we just said. I mean, it is relatively easy to make statements about AI. Yeah, so define some AI principles that companies may have, like the use of AI should be fair, it should be transparent when it is required, it should be with privacy and security, should have the right human oversight, etc. So those are all lofty statements, but making them happening for real in the daily processes and the business of an organization, that is a complex thing. Yeah? And the practical challenges that I've experienced and that most organizations run into the same, yeah, are several. First of all, there are no processes in place for dealing with responsible AI. So this is a system that does some things that may have good impact, may have some negative impact. And what you have to do is a process that helps you to analyze what the potential negative, mostly, but positive is also important, impact of using the system in a certain context. Yeah? So that may require a questionnaire where developers or buyers of AI ask the right question. So these are not the typical business questions about opportunities, about revenues, about customers, but what the impact is if the system doesn't work as it is designed to work. Yeah. Artificial intelligence is never 100%. There is always an error margin, yes, oftentimes mentioned as false positives and false negatives. And that means you have to assess the impact on people's life if there is a false positive and if there is a false negative. Yeah. So those are all kind of new processes. So you have to register the AI, you have to do a risk assessment, then you have to apply requirements. Maybe you have to escalate in case of discussions. And it also gives way to new roles and responsibilities in the organization. Yeah. Many organizations, especially those that are in Europe, kind of piggyback on the GDPR. Yeah? So that's the data protection regulation in Europe. And that has required a lot of changes in organizations in terms of processes, responsibilities, roles. So there is now a data protection officer. There are some committees. Mm-hmm. And actually, you can learn a lot from that if you want to work on responsible AI. So in the case of Telefonica, we've identified like three new roles and responsibilities. One is what we call a responsible AI champion. So that's the go-to person in case of doubts and questions or disagreements on the ethical aspects of the use of AI. For instance, should I use gender as a variable in my model for recommendation of a movie or of the of devices, whatever. So the question isn't whether you would want to use gender or not. Yeah? Maybe you shouldn't, maybe you should. But the important thing is actually this is a discussion. This is a debate that has impact on people. And you have to take a decision on that. Yeah? And you need to create this forum where you can discuss it. Yeah? That is one thing, the responsible AI champion. The other one is that we identified is what we call an AI ethics committee. Yeah. And that is a multidisciplinary group of experts from different perspectives on the impact of AI. On the one hand, this is privacy and security. It's also artificial intelligence. It's about data. It's about privacy. It's about ESG, environment, social governance. So it's a mixed set of experts that discuss the ethical things. And finally, what we saw as a challenge is also, in the end, this is a change process, a change management process that goes through the organization. Mm-hmm. And always there is a lot of cultural aspects. There might be some resistance. Of course, there might be people who really love it, the early adopters. But the culture thing is really a challenge that you have to work on through awareness, through training, through getting people on board, communication. So these are just a few of the challenges, practical challenges. If you want to turn those high-level principles, which are nice words, very important, but they remain words, what does that mean if you want to implement them for real in your organization?
So when you talk about an AI champion in a company, is that a business role? Is that, you know, who do you see you fitting that in that role well?
And in the case of Telefonica, it is a business role. Yeah. So you are basically, if you speak about compliance with governance, you speak about first line of defense, second line of defense, and third line of defense. First line of defense is the business. They're responsible for making those things happen. So responsible AI champions are designated person from within the business to work with the teams there to work on that. Yeah. The second line of defense is the compliance function that has to check whether things are okay. And the third line is the audit, the internal audit part. But this is, as your question is, in the first line in the business.
Okay, great. Now, in terms of, you know, so there, you know, what you're highlighting is these are not things that are part and parcel of the way we are doing business or have been doing business. What kind of awareness or training or was required, right, in terms of getting that readiness as an organization around this?
Yeah, so we started with going as broad as possible. So we created an online course of about 1 hour where we explain the ethical use of artificial intelligence. So we explain the principles. We explain that these systems are never 100%, that you have to make an effort to evaluate the impact if things go not as expected, and then a bit of the governance model. So training, large training that is accessible to every employee is important. Now, if you start with certain areas to implement this, then it's important to do workshops as well. So, and actually what we, our approach is that we take these responsible AI champions and we kind of train them such that they can give the workshops in the organization, in the local business area. You only, of course, need a responsible AI champion if you actually are building, buying, selling, or developing using AI. Maybe not every unit does that, so maybe not everybody needs. But the ones that do, they need this kind of role. And it's very important to train those people as well in specific things. Because the challenge here is that this is a different kind of thinking. It's not only, as I said before, it's not only about business and profits. It is also about what is the impact in the wider stakeholder, environment, society, customers, people. And to think about that is kind of sometimes not natural for the normal way of thinking. Because people like to think that the product is the best. And of course, it doesn't generate any negative impact. But if you look at it from a different angle, then sometimes you can detect and you have to detect those things early on. So our approach is, and that's also part of the training, this is a by design process. So you do it across along the whole value chain of artificial intelligence and also with providers, not only with ourselves, but also with our ecosystem. And if you do it by design, so from the beginning, actually, you can identify and detect potential negative impacts early on, and then it's much easier and cheaper and less traumatic to actually try to prevent or mitigate them than once if you are in the market and then suddenly you find out something went wrong and then you have to roll back, which is a very expensive process from all kinds of perspectives.
Yeah, that's very fascinating that, you know, you approach this proactively, right? Before it became a requirement. And, you know, speaking of requirements, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the EU AI Act and the timelines around that. But this is a very proactive approach. You've already taken this on as before it is a requirement to do so. But just one last question on this particular topic before we move to EU AI Act. Is the buy-in from management, right? How did one obtain that, or did the push come from management?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think many different companies are in different situations. In our case, it came more or less from, let's say, middle management. Our CEO and president and our he is very vocal on the use of AI. He was already since like 7-8 years ago. Big data is very important. This is a new way of doing things, and like 3-4 years ago, artificial intelligence very important. And so there has always been a perception that on the importance of this. But there was never a mandate coming from, hey, we have to develop a methodology for the responsible or ethical use of AI. That kind of came from the middle. But the fact is that we didn't find never any resistance. So even nobody told us to do it. When we presented things and results and plans, it was very, very, management was very open. So I think in most of the organizations that I speak with, if I need to advise them, today there is already a mandate from the top, because European companies know the AI Act is coming, so they have 2 years to get their act together. And many other companies around the world, they say, okay, this is important, so we need to do it. So they design from the top an organization and a responsible person to do this. But like 5 years, we started 5 years ago, that was not the case at that moment.
Wow. That's clearly a role model. So speaking of EU AI Act, where are things now? Where do we stand?
So as you probably know, the first version of the AI Act already came out in 2021. And it actually, the final text was, I think, approved in March, so last month, in 2024. So 3 years, almost 3 years. And that is now a final text. It's pending, I think, publishing in the official journal of the European Commission. Once it's published there, there is 2 years of grace period for having everything in place. Like the GDPR, there was also 2 years of grace period. However, there are a few things that come into force earlier. I think the forbidden uses of AI is coming into place in a few months. And some other things are also coming into force within 1 year. So it's not everything at the same time, but it's a kind of phased approach. The European Commission also installed what they call an AI pact, which is companies who want to comply even before, on a voluntary basis, before the 2026, on a voluntary basis, they already can do that and they can register themselves with the European Commission so that they are aware.
Okay. All right, that's good to know. So it's not a, you know, a static 2 years, you know, we have to this much time to prepare. It is a dynamic development and it is a phased approach. So that's really important.
Yes, but in this phase, if you have, I mean, the most highlighted things, yeah, like the forbidden use cases, they come into force before. But for the rest, there is okay. Like 2 years.
Yes, that's really important, and that's something that may not be that obvious, Dr. Benjamin. So to those who are looking out from the outside in terms of compliance, because the last time I had a conversation and looked into this, because, you know, till 2026, you have that grace period, and after that, that's when fines will start being applied, et cetera, penalties will be applied. So one thing that you had mentioned that, you know, and that we are aware of is that the EU AI Act does impact those who are not operating in the EU, for example. What can you talk a little bit about that aspect?
Well, the AI Act of European Union has a scope. Yeah? Of course, right. If a company is not based in Europe, is not operating in Europe, it's out of scope of the AI Act. So there's no sanctions. Yeah? But there are other things out of scope as well. Like if you're working for defense or national security, is out of scope. If you're only doing research without an intention to bring things to the market, is also out of scope. Yeah? So you can still do research on high-risk use cases as long as you have no intention to put them into the market. Of course, usually companies, if they do something, then their ultimate objective is to put things into the market. But from a research perspective, universities, academic institutions, there might be just a research intention. Now, in that sense, if you're an American company and you're only operating in the US, there is no impact of the AI Act. However, yeah, there might be, let's say, thought leadership from the European Union in a way that aspects of the AI Act may enter into local AI regulations, yeah? Which sometimes, as with the general data protection regulation, that has happened. There are many countries outside of Europe who have taken up ideas or aspects of the GDPR. And they're putting that in place. So in that case, you could also say there is a possibility that the AI Act is also, even for companies not operating within Europe, may have consequences, but those are indirect consequences.
Okay. Okay, so there's one thing that you had mentioned in the beginning that, you know, all aspects, all companies may not be using AI products, may not be developing AI products, or may not be AI-based companies. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, data-driven businesses, right? What are their, you know, how are they using AI? What are some of the challenges? And what defines a data-driven business, right? Those who might be using AI. Yeah.
So a data-driven or AI-driven company is defined by that most of the important decisions taken by the organization are informed by data or by algorithms or the results of AI algorithms. But that's a high-level definition of what it means to be data or AI driven. Yeah? So in the past, it was all about experience, intuition, knowledge. Yeah? That is all still very relevant, but there is now one aspect more. That, hey, I can have lots of experience, but if I look at the data, interpret the data, or predict the future, then that might not coincide with what I thought would be the case. So if that is happening for most important decisions a company takes, then you can say it's a data-driven company. Yeah? And that implies that if you look at any company has processes, business processes, so if you look at the top 10 business processes that take most budget, then you can say, okay, those are important decisions that the company takes. So those decisions have to be informed. Now, on the practical side internally, it means that data is considered as a strategic asset. Yeah? So in the past, and I'm speaking about the past, like 15 years ago, many systems were already digital and the data was somewhere stored in the system and maybe used to optimize the system itself. Yeah? But there was limited use of this data and it was not shared across the organization and it could not be used to inform other business decisions or even to combine it with other data in such a way that you can have a holistic business decision. So taking it as an asset, considering it an asset, it means also that you need a responsible person to manage the data, which usually is a chief data officer. Like you have a chief financial officer who manages the financial asset, you need a chief data officer who manages the data assets. Yeah? So it's this process internally that demonstrates that data is not just something, but it's an asset that needs to be taken care of. Then you speak of a data-driven company.
Okay. Thank you. I think it's safe to assume that either there are companies that have already are well on that path of being a data-driven company, or those that who want to be competitive and stay, you know, competitive with their offerings and products, etc. They're looking towards getting that data-driven capability. And to your point, which I really like, is that if you are looking to become that, you know, get into that space, it is really important to not just do the transition or adopt the technology or adopt the data-driven approach, but to do it responsibly right at the outset. If you do it by design, if you do it at the outset, it is a win-win for all.
Yes, definitely. So... the whole data-driven aspect of companies, it's actually a funny way of the history, because in the past we took people-based decisions based on intuition, experience, etc. And sometimes there were a lot of biases in those because of personal experiences of managers or CEOs who took certain decisions. Now then data comes along and they say, hey, but this data actually can be much more objective than what people think, and therefore it can help to take us decisions. And now we speak about responsible AI. Actually, we also are becoming aware that, hey, but even if it's done by a machine based on data, there can still be biases and all kinds of things that are wrong with the outcome. So we actually come back from, it's not only data-driven, it actually data-driven, but in a responsible way. And that is where everything comes together and is actually what we need to do as companies and as societies.
I think you summed that up so well, Dr. Benjamins, because, you know, we did talk about the fact that people have bias. So you move from that to data-driven. From data-driven, it was the assumption that it's going to be automated, it's going to be done the right way. But then realize that our biases that we were exhibiting is what the training has become, what is the database training for the algorithms. And so it's kind of gone by steps, right? Now, responsible AI is the whole premise to take what are those biases and make sure that we don't have them becoming problematic or becoming a roadblock to the right decision, as it's going to not be aligned with what may be the intended business outcome. Yeah, so thank you very much. If you have any concluding remarks or concluding thoughts, please do share. We are pretty much at the end of the episode.
Okay, so one thought for concluding. It's all about risks and potential undesired impact on human rights. Yeah? If you do a risk assessment of AI systems, as I said before, by design, and you find out there is no risk at all, then you can just move on as quickly as you can. Yeah? But if you do find a risk, then you have to act. Yeah? And I think we should also remember, because that oftentimes you hear there is a kind of, you have to choose, either you are you do innovation or you do regulation or you are responsible. I think it's not a matter of one or another. I mean, we have to innovate. We have to innovate fast, but we have to innovate in a responsible way. And that means for the large, vast majority of things, you can innovate very quickly. But for some innovations that have potential high impact on society's climate, people's lives, you have to think by design what might go wrong and then take action. But I think risk-based is very important. It's not that we want to delay the innovation in artificial intelligence. And also, if you are using AI in a responsible way, there are also many business benefits. Yeah? For instance, customers and society is more and more demanding from companies not only to think in terms of profits, but also in terms of the wider stakeholders, society, climate, stakeholder groups, etc. Yeah? Now, if you are responsible, and you're vocal about it, and you can live up to that, then actually customers are valuing you better. Yeah? The same holds for employees. Workers more and more are worried about their companies only pursuing profit at the expense of everything else. Now, if you want to attract talent, if you want to retain talent, actually, if you use responsible AI, you have a better chance in doing that. Yeah? So there, it's not only like putting stifling, hindering innovation. It's actually doing better innovation and also have business benefit at the same time.
That's a great point about attracting talent, and you know, especially as you're seeing the younger generations coming into workforce, they are so much more focused on, you know, the betterment of environment, betterment of because they're more responsible in terms of the earth as they are getting coming into the workforce, as well as looking at their future. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a great point, Dr. Benjamins, and a great one to conclude on.
Okay.
Thank you.